So today what we're going to do is we are going to talk about shame, guilt, and regret. And as we step into this at the beginning, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you my operating definitions for these three emotions. And I say that only because I want you to understand where I'm coming from as I describe the process, as I describe the difference between these three emotions, the way that I see it, especially when I'm working with clients. And you do not have to agree with the definitions that I'm going to be sharing with you today. That, the way that we, emotions are something that are not logical. Therefore, putting words to them can be a very complicated thing. And so, as we navigate our way through this, just know when I say shame, guilt, and regret, I'm going to be using the definitions that I'm using here at the beginning. And you do not have to agree with those particular definitions. You can define the words however you want. This is just my experience, and this is just my disposition as I'm navigating my way through all of this. And so, know that this is just where I'm coming from. That will make it easier for us to be able to do that. So what I want to start out with is I'm just going to give you some framework about how I see the three emotions, how they relate to each other, and then what the transformational process looks like as we respond to them. Then I'm going to share, as always, some tools for us to play with to figure out how we can approach each one of these emotions in a way that will allow us to be healthier and make better choices in each of the moments. Great. So let's stop then. So number one, shame. Shame is I am bad. And you'll notice that I am is a statement of state. I am bad. It is something that is intrinsic, that is always there. It's more than when we talk about guilt. Guilt is I did bad. So guilt is the emotional response to a choice that we made. Shame is an emotional response to who we see ourselves intrinsically as a person. Now, it is possible that that state that creates the sense of shame is we made a bad choice, and that bad choice is now the way that we define ourselves. I see myself as this type of person. It's not like, boy, I made this really bad choice and I feel a lot of guilt about that, but I made this really bad choice and therefore, this is who I am as a person moving forward. Regret is I'll make my head go away so we can read the whole thing here. I wish I could make a different choice. I take responsibility for these choices and I have learned the lessons from these choices. So I am bad. I did bad. I wish I could make different choices. I take responsibility and I learn lessons from these choices. And so I'm starting to tip my hand here a little bit in these definitions and how I approach this particular process. Because these three emotions are telling different stories, it is possible for us to feel any or all of these three emotions all at once. And we can even be feeling them about the exact same situation. So I made the mistake. I feel bad about the mistake. And it defines me in a particular way. And so it's possible that we could transform and peel away one of these emotions, and the other one is still there. And when that happens, it can feel as if the work we just did, the transformation we just did, the time we just spent doing that particular transformation, wasn't valid because I'm still feeling this thing. But what we've done is we've dealt with a portion of it. It's kind of like my car isn't running very well. And so I fixed the fuel filter. And the car still isn't running well because I also need to fix the oil filter as well. That I've fixed a real problem, but the system is still not running optimally. So sometimes as we're transforming these things, we'll have a transformation and the one thing will go away. And in some capacity, maybe not totally, part of our experience will transform. Sometimes we can do real work about transformation and healing that has to happen. And the way that we feel in the moment, and the way that we are showing up in the world, and the choices that we are making, and the way we see ourselves does not change because we haven't changed enough aspects of it. So I say that just because of the way that shame and guilt get built, it's easy for them to be multidimensional and just to be aware of that as we're stepping into this particular thing. So for me, shame and guilt are destructive, while regret is instructive. And what I mean by this is when I'm feeling a sense of shame or guilt, what I'm doing is I am trapped in the past. I am reliving the past. The past is defining this particular moment. For me, regret is I take responsibility for the past. I'm aware of what has happened in the past. I have learned from that, but I'm not reliving that moment over and over again. Oftentimes people will say, you know, I just live my life with no regrets. That is not something that I can relate to. I have lots of regrets. There are choices that I've made in my past that have consequently hurt other people. And there are choices that I've made in the past where I've intentionally hurt other people. And I regret those choices. If I could take those choices back, and that means it changes who I am, I would be willing to take those choices back because I don't want to be an agent of pain in the world. And I can't, but what I can do is I can learn from those choices. I can take responsibility for those choices and I can transform the lessons into what is going on now. So the moment that I am standing in is informed by the past. It has been created by the past, but it does not predetermine what comes next. When I'm living in a state of shame and guilt, I am trapped in the past and I'm making the past the thing that is defining what is going forward for me. Those of us who were brought up in a Judeo-Christian tradition, if we do something wrong, we go, oh my gosh, I'm going to hell. I had a friend of mine who came from a spiritual disposition where believed in reincarnation. And when she did something like that, she'd say, I'm coming back as a bug. Like, it's the exact same idea that there's this consequence in the future that is coming because of the choices that we were making. And I'm going to hell. I'm coming back as a bug. We're putting that in that context. And so when we are in shame and guilt, that is what we are seeing is coming. We have not transformed and let go of that thing. We're reliving it over and over again. So for me, the work that we're going to be doing today is transforming shame and guilt into regret. Because shame and guilt are destructive. I'm stuck in the past. Guilt is instructive. I'm taking that information and I'm moving forward. And so let's kind of talk about the way these show up functionally and the way they show up as a failure. And so I always like to talk about emotions in a functional way because our emotions are serving a purpose. And so here is the function of shame. And you'll notice that when I talk about function here, I'm putting function in quotes or inverted commas because it's showing up in a way that is trying to be helpful that may or may not be. So its function is to do something, but that doesn't mean it is functional. So the functions of shame, to keep us in our place. Again, shame is, I am bad. We are, because of our genetic heritage, 7,000 years ago, if we were pushed outside of the tribe, we would die. It's not hyperbole. Like, that is actually what would happen. But we needed the tribe in order to survive. And so there's a deep part of us that says that when we are rejected by our community, it will lead to peril. And so oftentimes the things that we are ashamed of because it's a state is because we are making choices that go against the cultural norms of the context we live inside of. And that cultural norm could be a religious culture. It could be my family. It could be my city, my state, my nation, my where I am. And so shame is trying to keep us in our place. So if I am making a lifestyle choice or I see myself as someone that is not inside of the box that my cultural context is, I feel a great deal of shame for being that particular thing. And so what the shame is trying to do is it's trying to keep me back in my place inside of the cultural context so I can be safe. Now, as a caveat, there are places in the world where when we step outside of cultural norms, it actually is a life or death situation. That there are cultural norms that people hold around gender, around sexual identity, around lots of things that actually can lead to physical harm and death. So I don't want to diminish that. Most of us who are having this conversation today are not in a situation in which that will probably lead to physical harm, But shame is operating from the place that if we do step out of line, we're going to be in trouble. Therefore, the shame is trying to hold us and keep us into place. The second function of shame is it doesn't want us to get ahead of our station. Like oftentimes we are in a situation where we are trying to do or be better in some way. And as we do that, we're stepping beyond the people around us. Recently, I've been doing a lot of upper limit work with myself and my clients. And for a number of clients, they feel like they are in a situation where they're not allowed to be more successful than their parents. And so they're almost ashamed of the money they have. I can't believe I'm a person who has success. And so that sense of shame sabotages them and knocks them back down. So they're not making the progress to go ahead. Because again, if I am doing better than the generation before me, then I am leaving the tribe behind. Therefore, that is something that is dangerous or scary for me. And then shame also like helps us to maintain those perceived cultural norms, like I was talking about, to keep us in place. But it's good for us to name those in a really specific way. And then lastly, it keeps from having our hopes dashed. I one time was working with a client around really, really, really severe trauma. And she was really hesitant to tap on that particular trauma. And I asked her why. And she said that tapping was her last hope. And if tapping didn't work, she would no longer have hope. And so by holding herself in place and thinking, I am not, like the story she was telling in her head is, I am not worthy of this healing. And really what was going on when we unpacked that, because that's where we started, I'm not worthy to heal. We were unpacking it. We got to this place of hope. And so shame, like, again, keeps our head down, but it also prevents us from getting too big for our britches for that opportunity for us to be undercut. And so if we have had hopes in the past, it is easy for them to be undercut inside of that. You mean regret is instructive? Yes, I probably misspoke in there somewhere, Renee. Yes. Guilt and shame are destructive. Regret is instructive. Yes. Okay, so here are the failures of shame. So this is how, when we feel shame, it, even though it's trying to be functional, this is the way it hurts us. First of all, it prevents us from growing. If I think it is unsafe for me to be something differently than what is around me, then it's going to hold me back. It's going to prevent me from learning. It's going to prevent me from pursuing something that I love. It's going to prevent me from having success. And again, it's doing this in the name of safety, but inevitably, in almost every circumstance, the over-functioning emotions, and I would say shame in almost any circumstance is an over-functioning emotion, is trying to keep us safe. And if it perceives growing as dangerous, then what it's going to do is it's going to undercut because it's only thinking about this moment. Our emotions are very bad at seeing long term. And it's saying, well, if I take this short term action right now, it is dangerous for me. So I'm going to prevent growth because trying to grow can be a dangerous thing. So it's very short-sighted, like all of our emotions. It prevents us from using our gifts. Exact same thing. Like if I'm in a circumstance where I'm called to something, like I feel this deep calling to do and be something different in the world, and it's culturally unacceptable, then I'm not using the things I'm called to. And so now we get a chance to beat ourselves up twice. Once, I'm beating myself up because there's this part of me that wants to do something different and I feel ashamed. The other part is going, oh, I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my giftedness. I'm preventing my impact. And so we get this extra negative emotion that we then have to tend with because we're not taking the action that we feel like we should be doing at some very core level. It prevents us from being helpers. When I feel shame, and I feel ashamed, I typically think less of myself, which means that I'm less likely to reach out to others as someone is helpful. It's like, oh, like, why would they want to hear from me? And so it makes it hard for us to move forward. So you can see how I would define in my vocabulary and definitions, how this becomes a really destructive moment, emotion. So the function, again in quotes, of guilt is to encourage and motivate us for making better choices by scolding us into better choices. You know, that guilt, oh my gosh, you screwed up, you're going to screw up again. Supposedly, if we're in a circumstance where we're constantly told all the bad things that we are doing, we will make better choices. That works about exactly one time in any particular context, that we can be told, oh, that's the wrong way of doing it. And it is a functional tool for a super, super, super short period of time. Then that constant voice that is scolding us becomes something that is demotivating, not motivating. And so it actually is doing the exact opposite of what it wants to do. Guilt feels like it is trying to make sure we're taking enough, and again, I have that in quotes, responsibility for our action. I can be in a circumstance where I can make atonement, make retribution, really be aware and taking responsibility of what is going on. And if I'm feeling the sense of guilt, I continue to stay stuck in that because I don't feel like I've taken enough responsibility yet. And when we're feeling guilty, I could be in a circumstance where I never feel like I have done enough. Like I could chip a teacup of yours, and as retribution, I could replace all of your china because I want it all to match and I want to take care of that thing, when proper retribution would be to take care of the thing that was broken. But I'm overcompensating in the way that I'm doing it. So it feels like I'm trying to take enough responsibility, but that's not actually what's happening. It's doing it in a disproportionate way. Guilt also feels like it's ensuring that we don't forget. If I feel really bad about a choice, subconsciously my mind thinks that I'm less likely to make that bad choice again in the future. The problem is that when I am feeling any emotion deeply, such as guilt, I'm spending energy because all of our emotions take energy to be felt. Therefore, I am in a diminished resource state because I'm spending energy on feeling guilty. And the more diminished my resource state is, the more likely I am to make an emotional choice that is a choice that I'm not super happy with long term. So it's trying to make sure I make a good choice in the future. In reality, it's undermining me and making it harder for me to do that. So we've touched on some of these in the explanations, but these are the failures of guilt. Number one is we end up taking up too much responsibility. Because as long as I feel guilt, for me, when I feel guilty, regardless what I have done to take responsibility, feels like I have done nothing. So it feels like I am at zero and I'm still trying to take responsibility for what is going on. And I take a disproportionate sense of responsibility. Number two, it prevents forgiveness. If someone is extending forgiveness towards me and I still feel guilty about it, I am not going to be able to embrace and accept the forgiveness that has been given to me. And the same is true internally. If I am feeling guilty towards myself because of the choice that I made, it's going to prevent me from that healing part of that forgiving process. It stifles our desire to take action. When I feel guilty about something, it's because I made a bad choice. So now there's a part of me going, oh, you made a bad choice. You're going to make a bad choice again. And so what happens is I become more cautious. I become more reserved. I become more inward looking. I become overthinking all of my choices because, boy, I made this really bad choice in the past. I don't want to make a really bad choice again in the future. So I am much more cautious, which means that I'm overly cautious. And in my state of being overly cautious, it makes it hard for me to move forward in that particular way. So when I'm stuck in a disproportionate sense of guilt, it prevents me from moving forward. So not only am I stuck in the past, it's hurting me going forward in the future. So the function of regret. Make sure that we've learned the lessons from the past. Like, it's really good, but I want to take advantage of the experiences that have happened in the past. Taking responsibility for the outcome of our choices. Like, I think it's a good, important thing. Like, this process of me leaving shame and regret is just going, deuces, I don't care. Like, whatever happens, whatever happens. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not taking responsibility, but I'm making sure that I'm taking appropriate responsibility. So then when we get to the failures of regret, I don't see any failures of regret because I see regret as being the healthy outcome of moving beyond this stuff. Now, one of the things that can happen over time is the emotional charge with regret will diminish, but that doesn't mean that I haven't lost that sense of responsibility of what is going on. Okay. So before we step into talking about some of the process stuff and reasons why the transformation happens or doesn't happen, are there any questions about any of the stuff that we just went through at a high level? Again, in terms of my definitions, feel free to push back on the definitions, give me your feedback on the definitions, questions about that stuff. Just feel free to unmute yourself. I can see yourself when you're unmuted and I'll just call on you. Or if you'd rather just type it into the chat box, go right ahead. Yeah, Renee.
Hey, Gene. Hello. Hey, the thing that came up just with that last thing about failure of regret is perhaps when one is constantly living in regret of the past. Mm-hmm. Like, so much so that it's informing what's happening in the day and not being able to move past that. Would that be more of a failure of regret? Like, regretting the actions, the past, whatever happened.
Yep.
And then not being able to live in the present because of that.
Yeah. And so this might be an issue of semantics that for me, like if I am so stuck in regretting what is going on, I'm probably going to start wondering, is that actually in this framework taxonomy, is that guilt and not actually regret?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's something that is so consuming where I am, again, like for me, the idea of guilt and shame is I'm trapped in the past, where regret is I'm aware of the past. And so if I'm constantly reliving it, oh my gosh, I regret this so much, probably in my terminology, I'm still feeling guilty. I'm not actually regretting it.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Because I was just thinking about, you know, somebody who made a decision, let's say, and lost a bunch of money, and now they're living in, you know, a life experience that isn't really what they want, or a love lost or whatever. And they say, I regret doing that thing. So there's more to that than just regret. There's other stuff you're saying. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that would be my guess. And again, like the other thing that's really important to recognize is that, I don't care if we call it regret, shame, guilt, George. Like, it doesn't matter what we're calling it. Yeah. What's important is the fact that I am transforming my resource state so I can be in this moment as a transformed and educated human from my past experience. So I'm able to choose what I am doing next in a thoughtful and deliberate way. Yeah. Now, when the stakes are really, really high, like let's say, for example, I have made really bad financial choices.
Yeah.
And because I now have limited resources, I'm making move financial choices. I need to be thoughtful and deliberate about that particular choice. Mm. You know, like for example, like, you know, this morning when I went to my favorite coffee shop to do some work this morning, I got a coffee, I got a leek Parmesan pastry, and I gave a tip, and I have no idea how much money I spent this morning. I did it on my credit card. I've just looked down because in the context of my life right now, that whatever it was is like, I'm lucky enough that I don't have to give that any particular thought. And there were times in my life where I would have gotten a cup of coffee this morning and I wouldn't have spent the extra $4 on a pastry or whatever it is in my high-end coffee shop because I needed to be really thoughtful and deliberate about my financial choices because of where I was.
Right.
And so like this is not making all of our choices have no gravity and no consequence to them. But what it's trying to do is it's helping us to have a proportional sense of gravity and consequence to them. So if I'm in a situation where I make poor financial choices and now I'm not willing to buy even the basic necessities for myself, and I'm starving myself because I am so afraid that I'm going to lose all of my money. That is not a useful lesson from the past.
Right.
But if I'm in a circumstance, it's like, okay, this is the state of my business is in. Do I spend $1,700 and upgrade my computer, or do I hang on for another year and try and grow my business before I do that thing because I want to be thoughtful and deliberate? Like that's a different sense of proportionality inside of that. And okay. So the goal is, how can I learn from the past, not be stuck in the past, and have a sense of proportion and context to the choices that I'm faced in front of me right now? That I don't want to be so casual that I'm not learning from the past. And I don't want to be so overwhelmed by the lessons that I'm afraid to make choices. And so whatever names we put on those is the work that we're trying to do here. But like that's what I'm trying to do ultimately. It's less about I'm changing from this emotion to that emotion. It's more about I'm in this moment free to make thoughtful, deliberate choices that are well-informed that I'm taking responsibility for. And I'm taking advantage of the 47 years that preceded this moment.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, you're very evolved, right? And so sometimes we're working with people that might be stuck in that past regret mistake mm-hmm. thing and not allowing forgiveness for themselves. So that's where that sort of shame, guilt, and all of that layer gets.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And as you'll see, as we work into the process today, like because there is such reticence for us to leave the lessons and the past and responsibility, the tool that we're using today is like the gentlest, most slowly creepy up on the issue that we're dealing with, so that the shame and the guilt aren't going, no, I don't want to heal at all because this is dangerous for me.
It's unforgivable. Yeah. Okay.
That's right. Absolutely. Because it feels like if I let this go, I'm just going to make the same mistakes again. I'm going to hurt other people again. I'm going to. And so because of the very particular natures of these emotions, this is the gentlest of all the processes. If you've been around with me since December of this year that we've taught, just because of the character and the nature of this particular emotion.
Yeah. Okay. Sweet. Thank you.
Awesome. Can you ever regret something without learning anything from it? I don't know. Again, this is an issue of semantics as we kind of lean into it and we think about it. Because the reality is, like, I went to see American Utopia last night, David Byrne's musical. It's on Hulu or Netflix. It's really pretty spectacular. It's the first time I've been in a theater in 21 months. I did a really good job. I didn't cry till the second to last song. I thought I was just going to cry walking into a theater because it's been so long. And I learned that I really love theater. Now, that's not a new learning, but what happened was it was an experience that reinforced something that I already knew. And so when I'm reinforcing something I already know about my world, about choices I make, about what's going on, is that learning? I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Because sometimes what happens is I make a bad choice and the lesson is, I knew that was a really, really bad choice. And this is the context why I made that bad choice, but it's still a really, really bad choice. So is there learning there or not? I guess it comes down to how you would define learning in that particular spot. So for me, sometimes learning is a reinforcement of the thing that I thought was good or the thing that I thought was bad. And sometimes learning is I now have a new insight or approach. And sometimes learning can be, ooh, I now have a new understanding of this thing, and therefore it's reinforcing the thing that I believed before. So my belief was, well, I like believe this like at a 7 out of 10. And after the experience, I'm like, oh yeah, my worldview is something that is being reinforced from this experience. Now I believe that at an 8 out of 10. And so it's, yeah. So that would be the way I think about that particular question. And so I like, again, there's so much semantics inside of this. It kind of depends how we define stuff. But based on the way I define things and based on the question, that's the way I'd think about that. Feel free to follow up to that as well. Thinking is just about being mindful. Absolutely. Like just being aware, you know, because I am notoriously good at overthinking everything. And so being able to just be mindful and aware of what is going on in the context and motivation and outcome and that sort of stuff is a really great, useful thing. And sometimes we change what we're thinking and sometimes we don't. Awesome. Any other thoughts or reflections or questions on those definitions before we move on to the next step? Awesome. Sweet. Okay. That button and that button. There we go. Awesome. Extra reasons why it is hard for us to let go of guilt and shame. There's a genuine struggle to be gentle with ourselves. That there is this, for me, there is this internal concern that if I am gentle with myself, if I am forgiving myself, I am letting myself off the hook. And again, it comes back to this taking too much responsibility for what is going on. And I want to be responsible. I want to be thoughtful. I want to be deliberate. I want to take ownership for what is going on in my life. And if I leave these emotions, there's a part of me that's afraid that I'm just going to fall back into my old patterns and continue to make really bad choices in response to what is going on. Also, this is a genuine struggle to forgive ourselves. You know, same type thing. Typically, the people who show up to a class like this are doing so because they want to take responsibility inside of their lives. And in the past, we've talked about all of the things that forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not letting myself off the hook, not learning lessons, not taking, letting go of responsibility. And so for me, it's important that I understand and have a really good context of what forgiveness means. And when I struggle to let go of it because of shame and guilt, it's because I'm not understanding what actual forgiveness means. The other thing that can make guilt and shame hard is when it's given to us by others. And what I mean by that is when we make a choice that we think is right, that we think is moral, that we think articulates who we are, and the people around us either implicitly or explicitly tell us that that choice is wrong. Again, going back to the sense of wanting to be a part of the tribe because that is a safe thing, it in some ways, it's almost harder to entangle the guilt and shame that has been given to us by someone else because we're not changing our own worldview. We're changing our worldview about a relationship to another person. And so what we're going to do as we get into the process, we're going to see there are a number of different ways to figure out where it came from and how to address that based on what that is. So awesome. Okay. So this is the process. So step number one is, and again, so two things. One is, when I upload everything later this afternoon with today and Tuesday's audio, you're going to get the entire slide deck. So you're going to get all the notes up to this particular point. Number two, everything from this point on in just a moment, I'm going to give you a PDF copy of all of this. So when we get a chance to play around with this a little bit, you're going to get a chance to just print it out and look at it. So it is all coming. Also, I would love feedback. I got some feedback last month that the light text on dark was harder to read, so I switched it around. So hopefully this is easier to read. If type is too small, let me know so in the future we can continue to improve the slide so it's make it easier to do. Okay, so number one, turn into the past actions that you feel bad about and name the action. And it could be something that happened once. It could be something that happened persistently. It could be who you see yourself as. Like that is a possibility inside of all of this. Number two, do any of these feel true and according to who? I think grammatically that is correct, according to who. I couldn't figure out if it's according to who or whom. I looked it up multiple times. None of them feel right. It's kind of like me using por and para in Spanish. The rule is whatever I think it is, I'm wrong. So probably this is wrong, but we will go with that. So do any of these ring true? And what is the source for that particular thing? I deserve to suffer. So what you do is you think about the action. And after taking the action, it's, I deserve to suffer because of this action. Does that feel true? You might use a suds level for this particular thing. I would take notes on this. I deserve to suffer. It's a level of sin. According to who? Now, in this particular case, it could be more than one person. I deserve to suffer because of what I think. I deserve to suffer because of what my friend thinks. I deserve to suffer because what my culture, what my community thinks. So I'm just kind of noting those particular things. I have to make up for this past choice. So if we're in a circumstance where we still feel like we have not done the appropriate penance or retribution for what we have done, again, I made this bad choice. I still have to make up for this past choice. How true does that feel? And then according to who, as we tune into that. It is too late for me to do better. So I've made this choice and I am in a state that is unredeemable. And again, according to who, as we navigate that, I need to make sure I learn the lessons from this past moment, as in I made this past mistake and I don't feel like I've learned everything I can from this particular thing. I am unworthy and deserving of success because of this past choice. So I made this past choice. Therefore, I am unworthy or undeserving of success now and in the future. And again, that could be something that's internal. It could be external, or it could be both. This last one is just purely internal. I keep reliving the bad choice over and over again. You think of the bad choice. Are you reliving that bad choice over and over again? So if any of these six feel like they are true, if any of these six feel like they are true to any sense of intensity, then we can assume that guilt and or shame is involved with what is going on that still has this opportunity to be cleared. Step number three, who is judging you for this action? If you are judging yourself for this action, it could be guilt, it could be shame, it could be regret. It could be all three of these. If you and others are judging yourself for this, it could be guilt, it could be shame, it could be regret. If others are the ones judging you, then it might actually be something else. It might be shame, but it also might be just, I'm dealing with the fact that I'm being judged by someone else. And again, so the reason why we're going through this is I have a process for you that is guilt related. I have a process for you that is shame related. And those are semantical differences. And we can do both of the processes if we're not exactly sure, if it feels like both or we don't know what it is. This is just a way of streamlining and thinking about it in a slightly different way. If you're still unsure if it is guilt or shame, if I could change the way I acted in the past, would it be enough to make it right? If the answer is yes, then it's probably guilt. If the answer is no, it's probably shame. So again, if I could change the way I acted in the past, that would be enough to make up for it. So then if the answer is no, that's saying it's something that it's intrinsic of me and it's independent of the choice, or the choice has so scarred me that I'm always that way forever. It's guilt as if like, oh, if that never happened, I would be all right. Do I believe it is possible for me to consistently make better choices in the future? If the answer is yes, it's probably guilt. Now, you'll notice here, it's not saying I am going to make better choices in the future, but do I believe it is actually possible for me to right this wrong? If that's the case and make new choices in the future, it's probably guilt. It's probably not shame, because again, shame is about state. If I have too many I's in there. I'm defined by this, and I will always be this way. Again, this is an idea that if it's no, it's probably guilt. If it's yes, it's shame. These three questions are basically the exact same questions framed in different ways to help us to just look at it. Again, it's not the end all be all if we know the difference between these two, but it becomes this useful thing for me to think about it. Let's see here. Or you could change it, but don't really think it needs to be changed for others. Yes, shame. Absolutely, Carol. That's absolutely right. Okay, so before we jump into the next couple of steps of the process, because now we're going to start getting into the tapping and how we approach the tapping inside of this, are there any questions or thoughts or concerns about what was just shared right there as we kind of navigate, you know, figuring out if it is guilt or shame and the value or lack of value in doing that particular thing? Yeah, Julia.
Yeah, I work with a lot of clients who are carrying boatloads of shame, and they really are not even aware of where it comes from. Mm-hmm. And I've used a lot of Brené Brown's materials and some other books to show them all the ways that they could pick it up in childhood insidiously, you know, and not even really be aware of what it was, like,
yeah,
you know, blaming themselves for abuse, that kind of thing. So the tapping that I want to do with them, they don't know what they did. They right. just think they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
So just want yep, to throw absolutely. That out there in case you have
And so actually what you're going to see here in the process is there's this little sandwich process where the pieces of bread are going to be some very specific tapping scripts that have nothing to do with why it exists and has everything to do with what my new state can be. Right. And by creeping into it in this way, one of two things happen. One is we start to find initial sensitizing instances and where it's coming from the outside, not where it's coming from the inside. The other is sometimes we don't have to know why we are the way that we are in order to let go of the belief that we have. One of the right. frameworks that I use all the time when I'm looking at these things that I picked up from the past is these are tools. Like shame and guilt are tools, and I put that in quotes, to keep me safe. And there are circumstances where, like, maybe it actually did keep me safe because I was not speaking up about my true nature around my family. It prevented me from being physically abused. So when I was 7 years old, feeling a sense of shame, even though it isn't maybe the healthiest approach, was the healthiest tool I could reach for to keep myself physically safe. Now, at 47, because I'm in a different context, that tool is no longer a functional tool. And it's not that I did the wrong thing by feeling shame, but instead I now get to put down the tool of shame and I'm going to pick up a different tool to navigate this. And at some point in the future, if shame is actually the functional tool for me to be able to survive something, I can go back and pick it up again. I have been, and this has just been unfolding over the last 6 or 7 months, and we've talked about it a number of times in these classes, is that when I've been doing inner child work and we're bumping into younger states that were in really dangerous situations, looking at the tools that today do not feel functional, honoring the seven-year-old as being a superhero for finding that functional tool on their own. Like they were ill-equipped to be dealing with what was going on. And because of their amazing resilience and creativity, found an internal resource that let them live through that particular circumstance. So that now on the other side, we can let go of that and we can thrive in a different way outside of that. And so absolutely, when we're going into something like this, sometimes we'll have no idea why, because especially if it was picked up in a state of, like, there's two types of trauma. There's trauma that we experience when we are in the state of safety, and there's a trauma that we experience in the state of danger. So I am camping with my family. Someone throws a rubber snake in my sleeping bag. I'm now afraid of snakes. That was a state of safety where I experienced a trauma. And typically in one or two sessions, we can clear that out. If I'm in a circumstance where I'm with an abusive, bipolar, alcoholic, dangerous circumstance that I'm growing up in, I can act the exact same way 2 days in a row and get different responses from the adults in my life. Therefore, I'm constantly vigilant because I can't predict what is going on. Those types of traumas get knit into the fabric of who we are because it's the fear we are living at every moment. It's in the air. And so in this particular case, we're not like fixing a rip in cloth. We're like trying to get red out of plaid because that disposition and world has been woven into the fabric of who we are. And so by taking the very gentle approach I'm going to share with you in a moment, gives us a chance to possibly see it in a new way. Two, possibly honor and venerate that younger self for being this amazing superhero, for finding the most functional tool that was possible that helped them to survive. And then three going, great, now we can put that tool down and maybe pick up a different tool. And all of that in the context of giving ourselves permission not to make this digital. Like when we are, shame as identity. And oftentimes, if for me at least, and oftentimes with my clients, if we're going to make a long-term change to identity, it's okay that if it's a gradual process, because I want to make sure I'm building on a strong foundation and I'm not like jolting to something that I am not equipped to in a particular way. On Tuesday, someone actually brought up the word identity when we were talking about shame and guilt. And one of the things that I've actually been playing with as one of the next things that I want to create, it'll probably happen after the first of the year, is creating an identity boot camp. How do I identify how we identify ourselves and how we see ourselves, start to craft a picture of what that new identity could be, and then gentle, healthy ways, letting go of old tools and letting go of old beliefs so we can step into that new place so that we can make the transition healthily and stand in that in a healthy, sustainable way. Is that useful? Is that thoughtful? Is that, you know, that's what's running around I'm wrestling.
I'm also wondering if any of the, are these slides accessible somewhere that I'm not aware of?
You'll get them on Monday. When you get the videos from everything, Great. You'll get all the slides on Monday, but you're going to get the process itself. You're going to get that PDF in just a couple of minutes before we break off and play with this in small groups.
Perfect. Thanks, Gene. Awesome.
I don't give everything right away just because I've learned as an instructor, the instant you give someone something to read, they start reading and they stop listening. And so I'd rather talk our way through this stuff than give us tools so we can do that particular thing. Awesome. Renee.
Just quick, before, like in some of these things, sometimes we get shuffled off to go do the process. It's for me anyways, I don't know about anybody else. I like to see it first. Like, could you demo it with somebody before we get sent to?
Yeah, I didn't do that this week on Tuesday, and I will do that. Yeah.
Okay, because sometimes I get in there and we're like a little lost as to how to approach it first. So
with one piece of instruction, you don't intuitively understand every single step I want you to do?
I can read into it, but I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm gonna make mind reading a prerequisite for all my classes going forward, just so that it's easier for everybody.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, we'll play with it a little bit before I send you off on your own. Other questions and thoughts about the first four steps before we move into the last three steps of the process? And then obviously, after you get the whole thing, we can talk about the whole thing. Okay. Awesome. Go there. Wrong button. That's the right button. There we go. Okay. Step number five. If we are going to tap on guilt. So step five is about guilt. Step six is about shame. And like I said, if you're uncertain, do both of these. But basically, this is a series of tapping phrases that we can tap on as we step into this tapping on our own, tapping with someone else. I'm going to take myself out of frame because this one fills the whole thing up. And so you'll notice all of the tapping phrases for this particular thing are structured in the exact same format. I give myself permission to. And again, this is to go back to this very gentle approach to creating a sense of transformation around this particular issue. We're not saying I have to learn from my past choices. I'm not saying I'm going to learn from my past choices. Instead, I'm saying I'm giving myself permission to. And if you are in a situation in which you are working with a client where that even feels like, or you're working with yourself, that feels like too much of a stretch, we can even change it to, I give myself permission to be open to the possibility that I can learn from my past choices, or I'm open to the possibility that I can give myself permission to learn from the past choices. So what we're doing is, like, we are standing as far away as possible, giving them permission to take the tiniest step possible and just opening themselves to the possibility that letting go of this thing. Because again, when we're dealing with shame, The Jesuits use the term ruined. And what they mean by that is when you learn something, it's impossible to unlearn it. It's kind of like when I stain a piece of wood, it's impossible for me to get the water stain out of the wood. I can shave the stain off, but the wood has been transformed. Or when I burn something, I can't unburn something. And oftentimes when we feel a sense of shame, that's what it feels like has happened to us, is that we have so radically changed the state of ourselves, it is impossible to go back to a healthier state, that it is too much for us. And so if I'm tapping on the idea of, I forgive myself, I learned from the past, I will never do this again, if there's a part of me that feels that this is my state, like it's, those tapping phrases are just going to bounce off the subconscious. Like they're not going, they're going to have a very hard time permeating that. And so by framing it in the form of, I give myself permission to, or I give myself permission to be open to the possibility that I can learn from this past choice, it gives us this gentler way of creeping up on the thing, which allows us to be open to the transformation. So it's easier for the subconscious to hear the reframes and the information we're giving. And so basically this part of the process, and we'll talk about a sandwich here in just a moment, this part of the process just goes through, I give myself permission to learn from my past choices. I give myself permission to take responsibility for my past choices, to recognize that I am not defined by these choices, to take responsibility, to not take responsibility for others' choices, others' emotions, or others' response. To know that I'm not defined by this choice. To know that I can make a new choice. To know that I can remember the past mistakes without staying stuck in them. To know that just because I did this in the past, and maybe even multiple times in the past, it doesn't mean I'll do it again. To be gentle with myself, to be easy with myself, to forgive myself. And this is actually something that was added when after people went to small group on Tuesday night. I give myself permission to be open to moving to regret. Now, more than likely, this is not necessarily a phrase that I would be using with a client unless we've had a long conversation about guilt, shame, and regret, because this might be too nuanced of a statement. But if I'm doing this work internally and I have a really firm sense, at least when I'm doing this on my own, if I'm trying to move from shame and regret for shame and guilt to regret, then giving myself to be open to this possibility allows me to do that. So these are possible phrases for guilt. So shame, it's a very similar thing. You know, tune into what is going on, same type thing. Give myself permission to know I'm not defined by my actions, to know I'm more than my choices, to know I am worthy. So you'll notice here the difference between the guilt phrases are about the choice, the shame phrases are about my state. I am worthy. I'm more than my choices. I'm not defined by my actions. I am lovable. I am capable. I am not what others define me to be. It's not too late for me. I can change. I can transform. I can be gentle with myself. I can be easy with myself and give myself permission to forgive myself. Give myself permission to be opening to move to regret. So again, when in doubt, use all of them. But if you have a sense of the direction that you're going, you can do that particular thing. Okay, so in the short version of the process, what you would do is you tap through those things, you would go back to step number two, you check in, and you would repeat. So that's the super, super short version. The longer version of this, and it's not super longer, but the longer version of this is, oh, wrong button, is what I would call a tapping sandwich with other tapping tools. And so what a tapping sandwich would look like in this particular scenario is, if I'm working with a client or if I'm working on my own and I get a bunch of the aspects and a bunch of the information where I want to use a different tool or technique, like there is an initial sensitizing event, so I want to do the movie technique, or I've identified it's something that I feel 6 years old when I feel this particular thing, therefore I want to do some inner child work. What I would do as a sandwich is I would take the phrases that we just used, I would tap through those phrases to soften and just create some space. Then, so that's piece of bread number one. Then the meat would then be, I reach for the other tools that I would be using with clients or using on myself to do some more work around this particular thing. Like I said, inner child work, movie technique, whatever the tool that you would like to use or make sense in that particular case because of your experience or because of the particular issue at hand. And then I would end that by coming back and going through that set of tapping phrases again. The other thing that you might do in doing that, instead of just doing that all the way through, is I like to use my favorite question, what do you notice? So if I'm going to do the sandwich, after I go through the tapping phrases as prescribed or whatever version of them that you want to use, I think, okay, great, take a nice big deep breath, tap on your collarbone. So what do you notice as we navigate our way through that? And just get to pay attention to that. And that might be the point where all of a sudden they start coming up with memories or initial sensitizing events, or boy, it feels like this, or, you know, it's always been this way. That might give me some information for the meat of my tapping sandwich in this case, which tool that I want to reach for in that particular way. And then again, after I do it at the end, see what they noticed. Then go back to the beginning. Just have them tune into the choice, the instant, the state, whatever it is, take a nice deep breath and feel their way into it and see if we work our way through the process again or work our way through some other process. So what I'm going to do right now, if you go to, and I'm going to paste the link just in the chat box. If you go to this link here that is in the chat box, you can find the PDF of the process. Or if you go to tappingqna.com, SGR, shame, guilt, regret, it will take you there as well. But you should be able to click in the box to get it onto your browser. And I would encourage everybody to do that right now. On Tuesday night, we had a couple of groups where folks just went into a small group and they didn't actually have the worksheet in front of them. And as you do that, let me know if you have any issues finding that particular thing. You don't have to print it out, but you can have it here on your screen as you step into that. So before we give this a try and play around with it, questions about the process, how I just framed it right there. And yes, that was a lot all at once, and so I understand. So how do we get people to let go of what is keeping them safe? So for me, the way I like to think about that particular question is, it's not that I'm getting them to let go of the things that are keeping them safe. I'm trying to get someone to recognize the context of the tools that they are using, and therefore they recognize that they can make different choices on which tool to reach for in order to be safe. So it's kind of like the number of things that I carry around in my backpack. You know, as time passes and I'm navigating the city here in New York, I live in a 6-floor walk-up. Which means that when I walk out the door, I have to walk down 78 steps, which means I have to walk back up 78 steps to get to my apartment. So when I first moved into my apartment, when I went to the corner store, I basically packed for 3 days. Like, I had formal clothes, I had workout clothes, I had everything that I needed just because I didn't go walking up and downstairs because I forgot something. And so then as time passes, I learned that I have too many things inside of my backpack. In order to navigate the city, I don't actually have to have a charger and 4 cables and 2 batteries and a bottle of water and a bug spray and sunscreen and like, I start to like pare down what the necessities are in order to keep me safe as I navigate the day, knowing that it's not going to take care of everything, but I don't have to have this giant backpack just to go out of my apartment. And so we're doing the exact same thing in this particular case. I am never trying to talk a client into putting down a tool. What I'm constantly trying to do is I'm constantly trying to help clients to recognize the context and value of the tool and the subconscious reasons why they are picking up or holding on to that particular tool. And in a process like this, what we are doing is we are recognizing the future danger in a proportionate, well-informed way. And when I recognize the future danger in a proportionate, well-informed way, I am more likely to carry the useful tools with me as I navigate the day. Again, to think about the backpack thing, I put something in my backpack all the time because, well, I just might need this particular thing, when in reality, I don't need it often enough for me to be dragging that around. And occasionally I might need it and I need to be aware of that fact. And so I am helping them to go, okay, this is what is going on. This is why I think that tool is keeping me safe. Is it actually keeping me safe? You know, it's kind of like someone who has built an 8-foot levee for 6 inches of water, helping them to go, okay, look, like, look at our history here. Like, the water never actually gets above 8 inches. Maybe we can bring this down to 4 feet instead of being at 8 feet. So it's reshaping it in that way. And the really awesome thing about the process is I'm not telling them to do that. They're like, oh yeah, actually, that's not as scary as I thought it would be, because we're changing their subconscious mind is the thing that's responding to that. Awesome. Cool. Other thoughts or questions about those sorts of things? Sweet. Okay. Well, we can give it a little try before I send you off to play with it on your own a little bit. Who would like to kind of go through the process and do a little tapping with me today around something like this? And as we do this, because we're doing it in a group setting, feel free not to have to share details as we do these particular things. Like, we can work through this and tap on this. Like, one of the really beautiful things about tapping, and one of the reasons why I create the tools this way, the person needs to be aware interiorly about what it's going on when we're tapping on this stuff. I don't have to know. Obviously, the more details I know, sometimes I'm more effective, and sometimes I don't need any details at all in order to be effective. So if you want to volunteer and do a little tapping with me around something like this, feel free to raise your hand. Hold on a second. For some reason, my computer is trying to do a dictation. Awesome. Okay, sweet. Who would like to do a little tapping or give this a try before I shoot you off to small groups to pray around a little bit?
I'll put up my hand, Gene, if nobody else wants to. I'm very willing to. I just don't want to take over Peter, if someone else.
Great. Peter, why don't you come on? Peter raised his hand. Hey, Peter. Right. How are you?
Thanks. Hi, Gene.
Good. So what I want you to do is take a nice big deep breath for me. And I didn't mention this in the process. My step one always is just start tapping. So you can just start tapping on your collarbone to the side of the hand. Don't feel like super consumed having to tap all over the place. But I just find stepping into the process a little gentler if we do that way. So I want you to tune into something that you feel like you're carrying some guilt, some shame around from the past. Yeah. And as you tune into it, like, share as much or as little out loud, just with kind of a sense of what we're going after here. And again, if it's just bad choice, that's enough. If you want to give some more detail, that's good as well.
I kicked an ex-partner out of my house in the same day she was released from hospital.
Okay.
20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you tune into that, this isn't part of the process, but I just like helping folks get a little more context of what's going on. As you tune into that, does that feel like a heaviness? Does it feel like a burden on your shoulders? Does it feel like something that is like corrosive? Because for me, guilt and shame is like acid burning from the inside out. How do you feel that?
I haven't thought about it before, but when you mentioned the word corrosive, I think that's probably true, yeah.
Yeah, corrosive, yeah. So as you tune into that, how true does I deserve to suffer feel?
8.
Okay. Eight, nine. Yeah. My favorite answer to how true does that feel 0 to 10 is 23. Cause sometimes that's how it is. So great. 8 or 9. And as you tune into that, according to who says that you need to suffer for this? Is this internal? Is it external? Is it both?
I do.
Okay, great. How true does it feel it's too late for me to do better?
Not really.
Great.
I mean, it's too late to change that.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And so what we're bumping into here is something that's really important is sometimes there's something that we're still in relationship with or we're constantly making the choice over and over again. So it has some presence. And that's what this particular point is getting to. And sometimes it's an individual choice in the past. And so there's not a sense of doing better because the moment is past. And that's the reason why we have all of these questions. So great. Yep. Awesome. Okay. How true does it feel? I still need to learn lessons from this past.
Yes.
Yeah. And how true does that feel?
6.
Mm-hmm. According to who?
Me.
Mm-hmm. And is there a sense of what that lesson should be? Or what those lessons should be?
Yes, it's probably not to try to overdo and try to compensate own guilt by trying to do too much. So what you said before.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the lesson actually is
that's what led up to this situation. I overextended myself and
gotcha. So like you overcompensated one way, therefore you switched to the other way and overcompensated the other way by being harsh. And the lesson is to try not to overgive because then when you're putting up walls, you're not putting up really rigid, quick walls.
Yeah, I might not lose the plot these days, but I still lose my edge or my balance.
That's a really great lesson. I love that. How true does it feel that I am unworthy or undeserving of success because of this? And in this case, maybe success in relationships.
It's definitely has been very true, and I think it's still there.
Still there? Oh, yeah. Huh? Great. Now, I almost just said awesome. And whenever I say awesome about something like that, I'm like, it's awesome. We have information. It's not awesome that you feel like you need to suffer. So I always need to clarify that. Cause I'm like, oh no, I'm not saying it's awesome that you're stuck here.
I feel myself. I didn't know these answers would come out of me either. So I'm thinking it's quite awesome.
Yeah. And that's why we do processes so for everybody, like, even though I teach this stuff, like I do these processes in this exact same way internally as well, because by having a regimented structure, it helps me to find stuff just like this. Okay. I keep reliving the bad choice. How true does that feel?
Not often, no.
Okay. Yeah.
But when I get reminded about something like this, I would do. It seems like that's where I go.
Yeah. Great. So who is judging you for this action? The next step is all of these have been internal, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Great. So step number 4. If you could change the way you acted in the past, would that be enough to make it right?
Yeah, it would make a big difference if I would have handled the same situation in a different way, in a better way.
Awesome. Do you believe it's possible for you to make better choices in the future?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're defined by this and will always be defined by this?
I get dual answers on that one.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And so what we can see here is what is showing up as we ask these questions and go through this, that it feels like the bulk of what we're dealing with here is guilt. And
my head says no, and my chest says yes, you're defined.
Yeah. But there is this little piece that's still hanging around that feels like, oh my gosh, this is unforgivable. This is who I am. So it's like we can see both of them showing up, but it's like lots and lots of guilt. And hey, there's also a little cluster of shame that's attached to it in that particular way as well. Now, that doesn't mean we have to do both parts, but we might, because sometimes when we take care of one, the way that these things are connected, they clear out and they just kind of move through that map particular way. Great. So just tap with me and just move from point to point. I give myself permission to learn from the past choice.
I give myself permission to learn from past choices.
I give myself permission to take responsibility from the past choice.
I give myself permission to take responsibility for the past choices.
I give myself permission to recognize that I'm not defined by this past choice.
I give myself permission to recognize that I'm not defined by these choices.
I give myself permission to take responsibility for my choices.
I give myself permission to take responsibility for my choices.
I give myself permission not to take responsibility for others' choices, others' emotions, and others' responses.
I give myself permission not to take responsibility for others' choices and others' actions and behaviors.
I give myself permission to know I can make new choices.
I give myself permission to know I can make the choices.
I give myself permission to know I can remember the past mistake without staying stuck in it.
I give my permission to remember the past mistakes.
Without staying stuck in it.
Without staying stuck in them.
Yeah. I give myself permission to know just because I did this in the past, it doesn't mean I'll do it again.
I give myself permission to know that just because I did this in the past, I doesn't need to do it again.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be easy with myself.
I give myself permission to be easy with myself.
I give myself permission to forgive myself.
I give myself permission to, what was that?
Forgive myself?
To forgive myself, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I give myself permission to be open to moving to regret.
Give myself permission to be open to moving to regress.
Now just repeat it for me. I recognize the fact.
I recognize the fact.
That sometimes I struggle.
That sometimes I struggle.
With good, clear boundaries.
With the good, clear boundaries.
And I end up overgiving.
And I end up overgiving.
I end up putting everybody else first.
I end up putting everybody else first.
And I end up putting myself last.
I end up putting myself last.
And then I learn.
And then I learn.
I've gone too far.
I've gone too far.
And I'm losing myself.
And I go to myself.
And to keep myself safe.
And to keep myself safe.
I swing back the other direction.
I swing back in the other direction.
Which sometimes creates choices.
Which sometimes creates choices.
That I'm not really happy with.
That I'm not really happy with.
And I give myself permission to know.
And I give myself permission to know.
It is possible for me.
It is possible for me
to be a good helper.
To be a good helper.
Without losing myself.
Without losing myself.
Because if I'm a good helper without losing myself.
Because if I'm a good helper without losing myself.
I don't go swinging back the other direction.
I don't go swinging back to the other direction.
So it's possible for me.
So it's possible for me.
To learn these lessons.
To learn these lessons.
Nice big deep breath. Give me a big stretch, move around a little bit. Grab some water if you'd like. Excellent. So what do you notice?
Well, I noticed one towards the last round there. Something shifted inside me, I think. It felt like. It felt like, you know, since we started, so, oh, that's why I'm here. You know, this is, you know, this fits perfectly into my kind of flow of things the last in the recent times. I was just going to be around last month and listen to that muscle tapping, and I forgot to cancel. And you know,
but there you go. Well, forgetfulness served you really well.
Very well, very well. You know, I'm that now I can, you know, by balancing, you know, when you said that, I can give without overdoing it and stand up serving myself and the world. That felt very true.
Yeah. And so you can see what I did there is I did an open face sandwich that time. So instead of going back and going through all of the phrases again, just for brevity and for time, I didn't go back and go through the entire algorithm of all of the things that are listed on here. But more than likely, if we'd be in a client session, I would maybe not go through this word for word, but I'd go back and just reinforce all of those things before we checked in and moved through that. But you can see what I did was when I was doing those questions at the beginning and he was giving me information, like he gave me the insight as to what we were going to tap on in the lessons that were there. Like, it's like, oh, this is what I did, which caused me to do that. Now, sometimes we are working with clients who are not as well-versed in transformation or not as self-aware as Peter is, as we were doing this particular process. And it might not be as clear and it might come in a slower process. But in this particular case, you can see all that I was doing was I was just taking advantage of two things going through the questions. One is guilt, probably not shame. And two, by listening to what he was saying, if I was going to do some of that extra tapping around it, I just took the information that he shared in those questions, which gave me the ability to step into that in that particular way. So any questions about the process, how I went through it? Any questions for Peter about his experience and what he noticed and that sort of stuff? Again, feel free to drop something in the chat box or unmute yourself. Just let me know, what I can do to be helpful to make this a little easier for you.
Can I just ask verbally?
So you can unmute yourself or type in there.
So just to close, so in my understanding, if you were going to close your sandwich with Peter, you would have done steps 5 and 6 again. Is that what you're saying?
I've done step five again. Yeah. So in this particular case, because in this particular case, it was mostly grief. So step five is about grief. Step 6 is about shame because step five is mostly about choices. Step 6 is mostly about state. Now, what I might do if I wanted to get really crazy with all of this, because there was this little dollop of shame in there, I might have put wheat on one side and rye on the other side. Like I might have done guilt at the beginning and shame at the end, or I might have done both of them and I might have done both of them. Like it's just like
you're
this is, my goal is for me, tapping is always cooking. It's never baking. Okay. And for those of you that don't understand that particular analogy, baking is a science, cooking is an art. Baking, we have to have ratios properly to get things to rise and do what they're supposed to. Cooking is, it needs a little more salt, it needs a little more seasoning. So for me, this is a recipe for cooking, and we can it's a framework to start from. When I create these explicit systems like this, rarely do I do every single one of these step by step because I'm super confident and comfortable in the way that I approach things. But this is good and useful for me to lay it out like this. And you can see how it can be paint by numbers in that particular way. And then based on the information that's coming, then I can get a little feisty inside of there, or I can just follow it step by step.
It was beautiful. I did a lot of yawning when I was tapping. So thank you, Peter, for bringing up that. Even the thing about the question about I deserve to suffer and all of that. I felt other stuff, myself shift stuff. So thank you.
Awesome. Good stuff. Yeah. And the really cool thing about the reality is the way that these identity pieces, especially about good enough and shame and guilt, oftentimes live in clusters. And it's a constellation that as we take care of one part of the constellation, the entire thing or parts of other parts can collapse without us having to know exactly what they are. And sometimes I can feel a sense of shame about two things that happened at the exact same point in my life, and I clear one and the other one exists 100% still. But sometimes, because they're knit together, as one is taking care of, the other is taken care of as well. And so again, that's why the processes are recursive. We go back to the beginning, we step in, and we give it another shot. Awesome. Other questions or thoughts about the particular process? Sweet. I love that. Yeah. And so Claire said, you know, I think it's regret. I say it's already regret, but I still feel bad. You know, like, again, it doesn't matter. The vocabulary around the particular emotion is semantics. And I'm like, my goal every single time I sit down to do anything interiorly, be it stretching, be it tapping, be it prayer stuff, like, I just want to feel a little better. That's it. Not done, not complete. Not, I'm open to all of that. But if I just consistently do things that make me feel better, it makes the next moment easier for me to navigate in that particular way. And it just becomes gentler in that particular way. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's so I have a practitioner that I work with regularly, and I think I'm above average tapper. I think I'm above average at finding these root causes. And one, I'm way too close to my own stuff. And two, I'm really, 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 really good at overthinking stuff and overanalyzing things inside of my head, because I have the process mind of a practitioner who's trying to figure out all of this stuff. And so it's really easy for me to overthink things. And having someone on the other side who's guiding me through this is, you know, so like my rule is, if I am tapping for something on my own for 3 sessions and I do not see significant progress, then I have to reach out to my practitioner and work on it from someone from the outside. Same is true. Like, if I have an action on my to-do list that gets moved 3 days that I didn't do it, and that's what I specialize in, helping people to take action, I have to make an appointment with my practitioner. Like, it's an internal rule that I have, because that for me is proof that I am too close to this particular thing in order to be able to move forward. So, you know, ultimately it's, you know, semantics. We're using imperfect words to describe things and just feeling better. Awesome. Okay, sweet. Any other questions before I whoosh you away? Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. I am going to send you off into groups of 2s or 3s. Number one, if because of technology or because of your disposition, you don't like want to like be the practitioner or have someone tap with you, that's fine. Just tell the people in your small group, just observe. That's totally cool. I want this to be safe. I don't need to like, cause sometimes we go, now it's time we get in a small group and like 10% of the class disappears. Cause like, oh no, I've shared with other people. I'd love you to have the opportunity to see this worked out and played out one more time. And if you're not comfortable, you're not comfortable. It's not a requirement. Do what makes you feel comfortable. But when you go to a small group, don't feel like you have to. Second thing is, I'm going to send you to groups, 2s or 3s. I'm going to give you 9 minutes each. So you can like each, if you're in a group of 3, that you can be the observer, you can be the person leading, you can be the person who is having the tapping done. And every 9 minutes, I'll just shoot you a little note saying, hey, it's time to switch. You might miss those notes. So someone grab your cell phone, get it out. Make sure you have the list of things there. As I send you off into small groups, Zoom doesn't always do a perfect job of getting everybody in the right place, or people don't go into small group for one reason or another. So inside of the first, if you're in a group by yourself, I will know that. I will whoosh you to another group. If you are in a group and all, like you're in a group of 2 and all of a sudden you get whooshed away to other places, it might happen in the first 30 seconds or so. Also, I'm going to give you a minute or two once you get in there to introduce yourself, say hi to each other, so you don't have to hit the ground running as we step into that. Any questions before I send you off to breakout rooms to play around with this a little bit?
Sorry, the total time is half an hour?
Yeah, basically a half hour. I mean, you can give a couple of minutes and then 9 minutes per person. So yeah, about a half an hour as we navigate our way through all of that. And I will be here in the big room. So if you need something, you can send me a message. You can pop out and ask a question and I'll help get you to the place you need to go inside of that particular thing. Minus the like 45 seconds that I disappear to use the restroom at some point, that'll happen during the next 30 minutes. But otherwise I am here to be helpful. Awesome. Okay. Let's see here. Groups are created. In just a moment, you'll get an opportunity to step into your small group. I will see you in about 30 minutes. Enjoy each other's company. Have fun. Bye-bye. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Awesome. So questions, comments, thoughts, things that you noticed, feel free to drop something in the chat box or feel free to unmute yourself.
Gene, I have something.
Yeah, go ahead, Lori.
So I started with stepping off and goes to somewhere else. I started with something that happened years ago that I just still felt badly about.
Yeah.
And then through the tapping, even though I've tapped on this before, mm-hmm. there were several things that came up that I had never, it had never occurred to me to tap on those. And part awesome. Of it was an external thing, like the way someone was looking at me. And then as that kept going, it even got deeper and was an underlying belief connected to my mom.
Wow.
So it was like, I got a lot of bang for my buck here.
Awesome. That's great. The way that we can kind of unspool things. And that's one of the reasons why I like explicit tools like this, because it like, I'm currently in a year-long coaching program and for some business building stuff. And before I signed up for the program, I asked myself three questions: was, can I afford it? Do I have the time for it? And the third question was, am I coachable? Because I'm a business coach and I know how to do this marketing stuff. And like, if I'm going to spend all this time and money, am I going to take the input from the outside? And I've been, yes, I'm going to do what they're telling me. And I'm going to go through all of the steps. And I have found all of these amazing things and learned these amazing things. And so one of the values of having an explicit tool like this, where we're just following the steps, is it helps us to find the blind spots we might not find otherwise. So that's super exciting to hear that you found some stuff that you didn't expect to uncover in that particular process. So that's great.
Oh, it was totally, it was like finding, like it was just one line. Like as we were going through the questions and all of a sudden one line was like, oh yeah, this brings up this that I hadn't considered before.
Awesome.
And then when we went there, it was like finding another thread that you just start pulling on, and pretty soon it unravels a much bigger thing. But anyway, it was fabulous.
Good. I'm glad. And I hope that you took some notes so that as you go and do some tapping later today or over the course of the week, you can just continue like just unpulling and unpulling and unpulling and untangling that giant mess. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sweet. Awesome. Cool. Other thoughts, other reflections? Claire. Hi, Claire.
Hey, I have to turn my video on. I didn't really have anything specific. So I was kind of an observer, but just seeing someone go through it and reading the questions, I think they're great questions. Even if you don't even tap, just to think about as well, just with like the stuff that say, I just kind of regret, it's yeah. still good because then maybe there is more attached to it. So then just by asking these questions, you can just yeah. think, no, it's cool. No, there's nothing more attached to it. Oh yeah, hang on a second. Yeah, there is. And no, they're great questions. So thank you. It's good.
Yeah. And one of the things I think is really important when we're approaching tapping is like, what do I say? How do I approach? What do I do? This sort of stuff. And the way I always think about tapping is whatever is useful, if we tap at the exact same time, we supercharge it. So any of the types of processes that we're doing from any of these modalities and just like reflection and just like doing it as a journaling exercise versus a tapping exercise, if it's useful like that, then if we tap, we actually get a little extra juice out of it at the exact same time. But this like isn't a tapping technique. This is a reflection technique that we happen to tap with at the exact same time based on some frameworks and useful things that I think are helpful. And by adding that extra aspect to it, makes it a lot easier to navigate. So awesome. Thank you for that reflection. I like that a lot. Cool. Other thoughts, other reflections, other things you notice as we navigated this?
I was very surprised that I would have called what I was bringing up shame, not mm-hmm. guilt, because I felt it came from others. But as, and I'm so glad she did, as I got led through the questions, all of my answers every single time pointed to guilt. And yet I had thought it was shame. So, and I think that it's going to need to be sandwiched, as you put it,
yeah.
to inner child work, because it really goes back to, I'm not quite sure who, where, when, but I said at one point, right. I can hear Jean's voice saying, who's the first person? What's the first time you heard that? And who was it that asked you that or told you?
That's awesome.
Because I think that's great. Where it was.
Awesome. So
thank you. And thank great. You, my group.
And again, like it's, like the labels become, the labels are only necessary when they become useful because they give us a different way of thinking about it. Like the language is just a tool. And regardless if you change the name or not, just having a different perspective on it becomes the useful thing. And oftentimes the language is the thing that gets us there. Awesome. Cool. Anything else? Any other thoughts? Yeah, Renee.
Hey, I just noticed as I went through, it was great. But then I tried, after I did the tapping from the page, because I was in this process piece, I kind of fumbled what to say afterwards. You know what I mean? Because I'm not in the flow. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. I got to next try it again and then just come more from, I don't know, just letting that intuition piece. Because, you know, you wrapped up with Peter so nicely with what you said and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just found that a bit sticky,
And it's kind of like the first time you tried tapping. You're like doing these odd motions and you're saying things and just tapping itself the first couple of times we did it felt super clumsy because we're like trying to do the process and we're trying to do it right. And we're thinking and of we're the steps.
In a time crunch.
That's right. And we're trying to tune it emotionally. And so in this particular case, it's like, okay, go do it really quickly. Go figure it out. So yes, absolutely. Okay, the first time through is always going to feel clumsy in that particular way. So that's a common experience. So, but thanks for naming that in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to give myself permission to be imperfect about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Cool. Awesome. Sweet. Other things or other thoughts? Okay. A couple announcements before we jump into a couple of move on. Next month, we're doing sleep. In December, we're doing how to set up a session to be most successful and how do we close down sessions so that when we leave a tapping session, we're healthy. So you'll email us about those things. The second thing is, I had this really interesting inspiration while watching American Utopia last night. American Utopia is about being human, connection, who we are, how we show up in the world, and what do we notice. This week at 9 o'clock on both 9 a.m. Eastern time in the morning on both Instagram Live and Facebook Live, I'm going to be doing what I'm calling 5 for 5, 5 days of surrogate tapping for 5 people. And I'm creating a little process. I'm going to lead you through it. So if you want to show up at 9 o'clock on either Instagram or Facebook to do that, both handles are tapping Q&A. So facebook.com/tappingQ&A, instagram.com/tappingQ&A. I'm going to have a little process. I'm going to lead you through it. The videos will be posted afterwards. You can come back and tap along to that in that particular way. They'll be like 10 or 12 minutes. It's not going to be super, super long, but just a real deliberate process of just going, you know, I can take 10 minutes and think healing thoughts about the people I love in my life who could use a little extra support. So if you want to join me this week, and it's not building, it's not like you have to do them in order, even if you just join me for one day, I'd love to see you. So that is going to be out there. Claire, I see your note here, and you were actually on my this afternoon. I'm going to email you about all of that. So we're all good. So yes, you're actually on the front of my list once we get done with this particular call. Let's see here. Okay, so yeah, so it's going to be 9 a.m. Eastern time, and I'm going to do it Monday through Friday. And it's going to be both on Facebook and Instagram. So if you like my page on Facebook, so if you go to facebook.com/TAPPINGQANDA, Instagram, it's the exact same thing. Instagram.com/TAPPINGQANDA, and is spelled out. And like I said, each day is basically going to be the same. I'm going to lead you through a little process. I'm going to lead you through some phrases. It's just a chance for us to you know, give a little time over the course of the week to think some healing thoughts about the people around us, which I am sure will give us an opportunity to do a little healing in our relationships as well as we do those particular processes and think those wonderful things for that. Let's see here. Yes, Claire put a really awesome note here in the chat box about recognizing what we are not responsible for, other people's thoughts, emotions, and taking those on. people who are in the tapping world have a tendency to be more highly sensitive temperaments and much more aware of the people around us and have the ability to take advantage of that. I actually have a note in my phone from yesterday of something that struck me. It's oftentimes easier to put other people first because we are much more in tune with their why than we are with our own why. Because when we're thinking of someone else, their why is getting out of pain. When we think of our why, it is something bigger, which makes it really easy for us to consistently put ourselves last. And so as we're doing this, it's really good and important that we're paying attention to that particular stuff. Awesome. Good stuff. I am going to have all the videos for everything that we did for the Tuesday class, for this class. All that'll be uploaded. You'll get an email from me tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern time, with links to all of that sort of stuff. I will have the entire slide deck uploaded so you can go back through and look at the slides. You can watch the videos. Gene at tappingqna.com. Point to the right words here on the screen. If there's anything I can do for you guys, like I said, next month we're going to be talking about sleep. If there's anything else I can do for you, I'm here. You know where to find me. Thanks for spending a little of your Sunday morning or afternoon/evening to all my friends over there in Europe who joined me. Thanks for being honest and vulnerable in your small group and doing a little work. Only good things come from us hanging out in this particular way. And I am honored and thrilled that you choose to spend Sunday or Sunday with me. Have a great day. I will see you guys real soon. Bye-bye.